Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Good morning and welcome to episode 85 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. We are here today to break down the week 18 regular season finale collapse that was the Jaguars' loss to the Titans, and break down a couple defensive coordinator candidate names now that Mike Caldwell is no longer with the team, as is much of his staff, was released by the Jaguars on Black Monday when a lot of coaches around the league get fired just 24 hours after the last game. So, John, how's it going?
It's good, man. Doug said he needs some time to process it, and that time was about 120 minutes, it looked like. he's a quick processor. That's at the top of his scouting report. You know,
Yeah, he had a 3 o'clock presser yesterday, and then the Caldwell news was 2 hours after.
I think that we said, and I'm not sure if we did in the last podcast, I know I tweeted it leading up to the game, that if they lost, there would be changes. I think everybody, you know, the Jackals, you know, fans wanted those changes to be Trent Baalke and Press Caldwell, but
Press Caldwell, that's right.
Press Caldwell, Jesus, and Press Taylor. But when you fire 10 coaches, you can say, hey, we did make changes. So we'll get into all of that. But what led them to this? Dude, has there been a more deflating game, not just in Jaguars history, but in recent NFL history, than you just came off a 1-4 stretch? You completely blew any chance you had to put the Texans and the Colts away. But here's your chance to fix all that. All you have to do is stop the most obvious game plan in recent NFL history, which is feed Derrick Henry. Beat an offense that hasn't scored 30 points in 2 years. And evidently beat a lame duck head coach. Like, Derrick Henry was ready to sign autographs and give his win one for the Gipper speech, like, after like five carries. Dude, it 28-20 loss to the Titans. I think there's a lot of things that you can point to for why it happened, but it felt like a snapshot of their season, at least in my opinion. You know, like, they couldn't tackle. They were terrible. You pointed out how Tennessee was first in screen usage. Great call by you. The screens worked massively this time, whether it was to Chick Okwuonu, Ty J. Spears. Kyle Phillips somehow converted two big third downs.
Yeah.
So, the issues that plagued them all year were there, which was tackling on defense. They lost who they were as a run-stopping unit. I didn't think Devin Lloyd played a good game. Like, I thought he had some woeful reps, but he was getting the defensive line put into his lap, like, consistently. Like, that one clip going around of Henry's first touchdown, it was a really bad rep by Lloyd. But Fadakasi is tripping 5 or 6 yards off the ball. First play of the game, Fadakasi loses gap integrity, and Henry gets, I think, like a 12-yard run. And then offensively, it was kind of the same old, Trevor, bail us out. We have nothing else, you know? Like, the running game wasn't working. The skill players let, in my opinion, the passing game down like they did consistently. I put more blame on the skill group than I do on Lawrence for the passing game not reaching its potential. The Evan Engram interception was obviously, you know, on Engram. The second interception, it looked horrible. I thought live it was horrible. I can say, per sauces, it was a receiver mistake. Turned the wrong way. And how many interceptions like that did they have this year?
It feels like one in every game where it's like you can't really tell who Trevor is even thrown at sometimes. And then you're like, oh, well, that's just a terrible throw. Just like this game, like I thought I was like, oh, it's an overthrow. Like it was probably because of his shoulder injury and he just kind of sailed it. Like I was ready to have an excuse ready for Trevor, but I was about to put the blame on Trevor. But yeah, no, like as you said, according to Sauces, it was a receiver fault. And like it's been happening all year with like receivers not being in the right spot at the right time. And like you can just tell. There's been plenty of times when like Trevor kind of like throws his hands up, even CJ Beathard in the one game that he started and two games that he played multiple times when CJ was throwing his hands up because receivers weren't in the right spot. And so it's like, it's so brutal when like, obviously you need your quarterback to trust his pass catchers and have chemistry. And then so many times, like the pass catchers just haven't been where the quarterback expected them to be. And it's led to turnovers.
Like, it's week 18. I don't get how that those same mistakes keep consistently happening. Like, yeah, I'm a Trevor defender. It feels insane anybody has to defend him, but obviously a lot of fans are upset with the season he had. I guess the game that he had. I thought he played really well in the first half. I thought his lone negative play was the aforementioned interception, which I now have learned wasn't even on him. Down the stretch, obviously. So that entire kind of sequence at the end of the game kind of summed up like what the hell is wrong with this offense. Like to me, they get the interception by Andre Sisco, returns it to the Titans 28-yard line. You have 12 minutes left in the game. There is a ton of time left. It took them over 5.5 minutes to get to the one and turn it over, you know, on downs. The Titans have the best red zone defense in the league this year in terms of limiting touchdowns. Like, they have the highest percentage of any team. But they kill a ton of clock. Travis Etienne breaks off a 14-yard run to the 4-yard line, holding Brenton Strange, who, other than the holding, his lone play was half-tackling the punter.
Was, like, helping the punter get on the ground. He, like, that was an interesting tackle.
Yeah, I'm sorry. People can't tell me that Tyreek Stevenson or Osiris Torrance wouldn't have been useful in this game. So you have that play. You have a 6-yard completion to Zay Jones to the 1-yard line. I thought he got kind of screwed on the spot, which seems like consistently happens to the Jaguars. In my opinion, if he isn't playing at like 70, 80%, he probably scores there. I don't put Zay's disastrous 2023 season on him. I still think the contract hasn't aged well because even in his good season, he needed 100-plus targets to get like 800 yards. And he was one of the more inefficient players in football, right, at least at the wide receiver position. I said that today, and people were – you weren't saying that coming into the season. No, I said last year that his 2022 wasn't that impressive. He got fed the ball. Then – third down. What the hell was that? Was that the worst play call of the season?
Are you talking about the third down on the goal line?
Yeah. Was that the worst play call of the season?
Yes. And I knew as soon as they lined up in that formation that it was going to be a pass.
Everybody did.
It's crazy because like there wasn't even like a play fake. It's just like Lawrence like immediately rolled out and then his four or maybe even just three eligible receivers were like a bunch of like scrubs, frankly. I feel like it was like Tank Bigsby and Luke Farrell, and like Evan Engram was staying into block.
Yeah, like Strange basically set a pick. So it was ETN or Luke Farrell. And when he let go of the ball, in my head, I'm like, oh my God, they're designing this play for Luke Farrell. But it was the most telegraphed play action pass in the world.
Yeah.
Tennessee was able to cover it like that. You know, He was an asinine formation. In my opinion, you need a yard, asinine play call. I'm not going to criticize them for not giving the ball to Tank Bigsby there, because I've said all season that Tank Bigsby has struggled. Tank Bigsby was running really well on Sunday. It was by far the best game that he's played. Like, that third and short conversion that he got in the red zone was massive. But how that's your call on third and one? I don't, like, to me, you go for a run there, or you try to sneak there and then maybe go for a pass on fourth down, but at least give your quarterback a chance to make a play. You know, like, that play literally is dead on arrival if they pick up ETN coming out of the backfield, and they did. Like, if you go back and watch the play, the linebacker literally read ETN the entire way and immediately was on him. And then you get the fourth down. I see both sides of the coin. I'll just come out and say, Trevor Lawrence effed up. it was a terrible. it was a golden retriever brand, you know, decision. You know, he swapped brains with Kirk Herbstreit's dog in that moment. it was almost 2 yards away. The right guard's pulling. Like, if you're going to sneak, you need, like, double team in the A gap, and right. That wasn't what was happening. I don't think the design play would have worked either. It was obvious it was a design handoff to Tank with Sheriff pulling and Brendan Strange leading him away. But if you watch the play, Luke Fortner got driven back to Daytona and would have ended up in Brendan Strange's lap, like, literally right in the hole where the run was supposed to go. So it wouldn't have worked regardless, but it was still a terrible decision by Lawrence. But to me, it was like, it's worked so many other times that it's hard for me to knock when it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if people can be pissed that he goes rogue in those scenarios, because he's done it. I mean, he did it against the Chargers last year. You know, like, and it, I think this was the first time it didn't work.
I was going to say the Chargers time was, like, also a rogue scenario where they had a different play called, and it was a running play to a running back. And it was not really, I mean, I don't know if anyone was pulling on that specific play, but it was definitely not called a quarterback sneak. And I think Mia said that Fortner told her after that one that, like, he didn't hear Trevor, like, say anything or, like, wasn't expecting anything. So it was, like, the exact same scenario where Trevor just kind of, like, made the decision beforehand, and then it was just different outcomes.
Yeah, which, in my head, if you're going to be mad about him doing it this time, then you should be pissed about the other times that he's done it and it worked. But I not to defend the decision, it was a completely harebrained, like, this, like, I'm trying to think the best way to put it. It was an awful, abhorrent decision by him. But he was also, like, the only reason they were in that game, in my opinion. That first touchdown to Ridley, Ingram's interception, which led to a touchdown, came on third down, and it would have been a converted first down. Zay Jones had a drop on a 16-yard gain earlier in the game. I didn't think Trevor Lawrence was one of their five biggest issues on offense in this game.
Yeah.
Granted, the final drive, that third down throw to Tim Jones basically seemed like an automatic throwaway where Trevor was just like, okay, my first read's not open. Let me try to get it on the next down. And then his last throw to Evan Ingram was terrible. I concede that. I do think the defense lost them this game, though, because say the defense isn't like a sleeve, they kick two field goals, right? And you score 26 points.
Yeah, that's good enough. I feel like we said on a preview pod, or at least I said that, like, it was one of those games where you kind of expect the opponent to score 14 or 17. And so, like, you kind of expect the defense to get the job done. And then it was really a question mark of whether the offense got the job done. And then it was just flip-flopped. And it feels like it's been that way for the entire season. Doug kind of, like, mentioned it at the presser yesterday about how they just haven't played complimentary football. And it feels like they've had maybe two games, probably only one, where, like, all three units actually played well and played together. And then every other game was just, even if one unit played well, the other two didn't. Or in a lot of cases, just none of the units played well.
Yeah.
To go back to the Trevor decision, like, it was definitely a bad decision, but it was also an understandable one, because you're the one who tweeted after the game, like, is this a quarterback who trusts the offense? And I think both play calls or both outcomes on third and fourth down was, like, you could kind of chalk it up to a lack of trust, where on the third down, Jacksonville's coaches continued to not really trust their offensive line. And like really in the red zone, especially, you should be able to just say, all right, we're going to line up and run this play. And it's going to be better than your guys or whatever play you have drawn up. And that's how we're going to win. But the Jaguars like don't feel that they can win that way. And especially on offense in the red zone. And so then they're like, draw up these ridiculous formations and play action plays out of the goal line. So like I think the offensive coaches like didn't really trust their players to just line up and execute. And then the quarterback didn't really trust the rest of his offense to line up and execute either. And so I think it's not really a surprise that we've seen change on both sides of the ball, even if both coordinators aren't gone. Like obviously it's not like the problem was just one side of the ball, but yeah, for this game specifically, it was the defense was the unit that kind of like messed up a little bit more. Tennessee averaged 0.3 EPA per play on first and second down runs, which was the fourth best mark by any team this season.
That's crazy.
It was after like two games from the Dolphins, and then the Commanders had a really good game against the Broncos early in the season. I think like
that one doesn't count.
Brian Rodriguez or whatever his name is, Brian, whoever the Redskins or the Redskins, the Commanders.
Hey! Don't cancel us.
Whoever the Commanders running back, I think, just had a couple of touchdowns on the ground. So Tennessee had the fourth best game of any team this season by like rushing efficiency on first and second downs.
Don't just keep rambling off stats.
I'm trying to move past it.
Go ahead.
And then Derrick Henry's 153 rushing yards, which was his most since October 2022. It was easily a season high, and he's only gone for over 150 yards, I think twice in 3 years. So, man, it's brutal. It's funny how, like, Henry is a free agent this upcoming offseason, and there's definitely a chance that he returns to the Titans, but after that game, it feels like there's no chance just because of the way he went onto the field afterwards to like kind of thank the fans and really give a goodbye speech.
He literally cut a promo, like a wrestling promo, like that. That's how down bad, you know, the Jags were. And that is why, in my opinion, they lost the game, was because they just got completely dominated up front by Tennessee. Both, I believe both Henry and Tajay Spears had over 8 yards per carry, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
The Titans had 4 plays of over 20 yards and 3 of them were runs, including like a 69 yard run on the second play of the second half, which, you know, so much for halftime adjustments.
Right.
To me, the way the Jaguars were supposed to win that game was stop the run and then get after the Titans in passing situations. How many true dropback passing situations did the Titans even have? People said Josh Allen was invisible. How many times could he really rush the passer?
I was watching him a lot, especially in the fourth quarter, because he's talked about how much legacy games mean to him and like showing up in the fourth quarter when like superstars really show up. And he's done that a couple of times this season. I feel like he did it against the Titans back in week 11 too, where he had like a clutch strip sack. Maybe I'm misremembering, but I was definitely expecting him to come up big in the second half or the fourth quarter. And it never really did happen, but like I was watching him and he never really had a chance to affect the quarterback.
Yeah. Okay. So just for context, Josh Allen had 14 pass rush snaps the week before in true pass rush sets, which is no play action, no RPOs, no screens. He had 6 this week. So he really had 6 snaps where he could actually rush them. And you can do that as an offense when you're dominating on the ground. That's why the run game is important, because when you can run the ball, that's why Ryan Tannehill and Kyle Phillips can convert 3rd-and-1, 3rd-and-2. The Titans were never really in 3rd-and-long at all. And because of that, they were able to dink and dunk their way, use screens, and take the Jaguars' lone advantage, which was Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker versus their offensive tackles, out of it. And the few times they could rush the passer, I thought Allen did well. I thought Trayvon had one of his better games of the year as a pass rusher. He only had like, a handful of true pass rush reps. But I mean, the one he had that led to Allen's sack was a great rep. And then his rip and, you know, dipping around the edge on his sack was fantastic. I thought it was a good game from Trayvon. It's just when you get beat up so much against the run, you literally can't rush the passer. And to win this game, the Jaguars needed to be able to rush the passer, which it's obvious that when we'll talk more about the defensive coordinator move, but it's obvious that the defensive staff got let go because of performances like this where you get dominated against the run. But again, I have to ask, you paid three interior defensive linemen, you paid an inside linebacker, and you traded up in the first for an inside linebacker. You have a number one overall pick and one outside linebacker, one of the NFL's best outside linebackers at the other spot. Is it a coaching issue or is it a talent issue? I think it's a talent issue, man. I think they missed on several of their defensive line investments. I'm not going to kill them for Devon Hamilton. Dude had a life-threatening like issue. Like that, nobody can foresee that. But Fadakasi had a bad game with Robson Harris. Where was he on Sunday? Yeah. You know, Devin Lloyd and Foyer, they got picked apart over that losing streak, in my opinion.
I think you could probably point to coaching in terms of like specific positional coaching. And like, I think it's more of like a talent issue than a Mike Caldwell issue. But I think like, I don't know, like there was like a pretty clear disharmony really for most of, or all of the season, but especially in that week 18 game between the linebackers and the defensive line. Cause like the linebackers have been kind of targeted by opposing offenses basically since the Niners game. I feel like Channing kind of helped expose them. But sure. Like they're really like not getting a lot of help at all with like the front trenches, like kind of because like they preach gap integrity so much. And like when you think of gap integrity, like I feel like you mostly think of linebackers who are like filling in gaps because they have to. I mean, sometimes like the gap is right in front of them, but other times they have to move around a lot more. Whereas for defensive tackles, like the gap is always right in front of you, but like defensive tackles first and foremost need to hold up their gap integrity so that it makes the linebackers' jobs easier behind them. It's probably like fairly similar to like the offensive line and running backs, like where we all know that like Travis Etienne, even though he had a 1,000-yard season, was probably a little bit underwhelming, especially how he performed in the second half of the season compared to the first. But I think everyone would tell you that like it's not really all his fault and that he's not getting a lot of room to work with because of like the offensive line. And so I think you can say something similar with the linebackers where they don't really have a lot of room to work with because of the defensive tackles. And so I think it's like part of that issue is the talent that the defensive tackles that they have. And part of it is that like they're, I mean, I stopped playing football freshman year of high school, so I can't go on about like defensive line techniques and all that, but just to the naked eye, it feels like they need better coaching up front. So again, like I don't think that's like necessarily like on Mike Caldwell to be honing in on every single position. Like that shouldn't really be his job.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. I guess my entire stance is, again, not going to blame them for Hamilton. He had a great 2022. Nobody could foresee what would have happened to him this year. But I've gone on record before saying the Robson Harris extension was a mistake and that they paid him for like a hot stretch at the end of last year, but you're asking him to be like to basically be your interior pass rush, and that it just wasn't the case. Tyler Lacy and Jeremiah Ledbetter were the only two new faces on the interior defensive line this year, and like that's not.
I do think that like I'm trying to think of where we might have put defensive line or interior defensive line on the list of like Jaguars 2023 offseason needs. Cause I definitely remember being surprised seeing somebody saying that like the Jags are confident going into the season with Ham, Roy Robertson, Harris, and Foley Fatukazi as like their starting three defensive linemen in 3-4 packages. And I was like a little surprised by that because I thought at least one of Foley or Roy was going to be replaced and then like kind of put into a backup role. Like I thought Foley would be like the early down guy and then Roy would be like the laid down guy, but then they would still add another body. And then not only did they not add a body, but they ended up essentially losing Devon Hamilton for the season.
Yeah, I think so too. And yeah, I wasn't getting on a soapbox saying fix the interior defensive line, but it's also not my job. You know, like, it's their job to find players, and the players that they found to play those positions were the biggest reason that they lost on Sunday. And are they the biggest reason that they missed the playoffs? No. I thought Doug Peterson made a good point yesterday. He was like, they need to understand that losing in week two, losing week three, that does like play a role in the divisional race, because it does. So I don't think they lost eight games because of the interior defensive line. I think that they lost this game because of it. And I just, to me, when you put that much investment in it, somebody has to answer for it. And it's obvious that they think it's coaching on the defensive side. And here's my thing. I don't know, maybe this is hypocritical of me. I think the issues on defense are talent-based. I think the issues on offense are coaching-based. Is that wrong?
It's both, because like on offense, like, you're having like these miscommunications all over the place, and like, yeah, there's turnovers and the players are the ones turning the ball over, but I feel like so many of the turnovers come because like the players are pressing to make a play and stuff like that. And so like, you should have like a third and fourth receiver that's better than Zay Jones and Jamal Agnew going into the season, but you could also have like coach them up better and like try to get something out of Parker Washington and Elijah Cooks and Brenton Strange and Tank Bigsby and all these like new faces that they have. Like, I feel like it's honestly like hard to discern whether it's like, oh, these guys stink, or these guys are pretty solid, but they just haven't been like coached up very well in the past year. I feel like it's the same for defense, where like, obviously they don't really have the juice at like talent wise. And you definitely saw that, like, with all the injuries that they had, like with Ham going down, Cisco going down, Tyson Campbell going down. At the same time, like, they've been a bad tackling team for most of the season. And like, I feel like tackling is a huge coaching thing, where like I feel like the most like inspired defenses are the best teams at at tackling, not necessarily like the defenses that just have the most talented players. And so
yeah,
I think it's probably more so on the talent, but like, you can't say it's one or the other. It's not that binary.
So here are the seven AFC playoff teams. If you take out the quarterback position, don't count the quarterbacks, which of these teams do you think the Jaguars are more talented than? Baltimore?
No.
Buffalo?
No.
Kansas City?
No.
Houston? It's closer than people want to think.
Houston would probably be a toss-up, because like, they've got like their cornerstones on each of the
talent, dude.
They've got C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, while the Jags have Trevor Lawrence and Josh Allen. And then, like, the rest of the roster is still kind of, like, being built up from, like, being in a recent rebuild. But I would say the Texans roster is probably a little bit better.
I think so, too.
I think they, like, did a better job of, like, finding good veteran fits. Like, Robert Woods might not be as productive as Zay Jones has been, but, like, for what you're asking him to bring as a veteran. How do you like poppy trees?
Cleveland Browns?
More talented roster.
They have a more talented roster than the Browns? The
Browns are more talented, right.
Okay. Miami Dolphins?
More talented. The Dolphins are more talented.
Pittsburgh Steelers?
Steelers are more talented. That one's – the Steelers are more talented, but that one's probably, like, closer than most people would think. Because I think a lot of people would be like, oh, like, Tomlin – like, the Steelers is really just Tomlin and, like, a really good – roster, because like, obviously Kenny Pickett isn't giving them much, but I think the roster isn't really as good as most people would think.
If Trevor Lawrence was on the Steelers, I think they'd be like 12-5.
Yeah.
Let's go down the list a little bit more.
Roster, but like, I just think they're not as talented as people league wide might think, but still more talented.
Let's go down the list a little more. Cincinnati Bengals?
Nope.
Jaguars are more talented than the Bengals?
No, sorry, we got mixed up with this. I'm saying no, the Jaguars are not more talented. Okay. I'll just say the team name. Bengals are more talented.
Okay. Indianapolis Colts. I'd go Jaguars probably. Your silence is definitely
I'm trying to think of like position by position, I think you gotta go Jaguars.
Okay. And then Las Vegas Raiders, I'd go Jaguars, right?
Yeah.
Broncos, Jaguars.
Jaguars.
Jets, Jaguars.
Yeah, their defense is kind of nice, but like not.
Yeah, they have a better defense than roster, but.
Yeah, their offense has some holes. I think the Broncos roster is actually like a little bit closer to contending or just competing probably than people might think. But yeah, I'd still take the Jags over the Broncos at this stage.
Like to me, the Jets offensive roster is like Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall and then a complete albatross. The least likable quarterback in the NFL as well. I don't mean Zach Wilson. Tennessee Titans, Jaguars.
Yeah.
Chargers, Jaguars.
Yeah.
Patriots, Jaguars. So that's seven teams in the AFC. I think you can save the Jaguars rosters for sure better than outside a quarterback. That's a problem to me, man. You've had a quarterback on a rookie deal. You had multiple first-round picks. You've had a ton of bites at the apple in free agency. And what do you have to show for it? The league's most expensive inside linebacker room? a wild card win that was the result of the biggest like choke in recent playoff history? I've had fans tell me that this season, like today, that this season was successful because they went 9-8 and they've been so bad so many previous seasons.
No, you got to be able to adjust expectations just because they were like picking top five in the draft for a decade plus or whatever it was, like, doesn't mean like you're going to be happy when they finish with a top 22 or 23 record. Like that's, yeah, that's, I understand it like from a fan's perspective. Cause like it's been rough in Jacksonville. So like, I get it, but that's not really the best way of going about it.
Yeah, so I'm with you. Gus, do we have anything else from my Week 18 game before we get into the coordinator talk, or is that all? Like,
I think this is a good time to unleash my hot take. I wasn't sure if I should save it or leave it, but the take is that everything and nothing is Trevor Lawrence's fault, where, like – nothing is Trevor Lawrence's fault because like he's a very good player and like the team is objectively not losing because of him. Like, yeah, he's had some ugly turnovers. Yeah, he was saying himself at his locker room yesterday that he could be a lot more consistent, not just with like less turnovers, but just on a down-to-down basis in general. So like it's not like he was perfect, but he was the closest player to being perfect on the roster besides Josh Allen, maybe. And so I think like the reason it's not his fault because like he's like at the bottom of the list of players or people who have cost the Jaguars games. But the reason that it is kind of all of his fault is because I think he's the one that gave the Jaguars false hope more than anyone else, because like the best 6 to 8 game stretch of his career easily was the second half of the 2022 season when the Jags went on that miraculous run and then won in the divisional round against – or the wild card round against the Chargers. And so I think that them having a quarterback who is legitimately playing at an MVP caliber level, like just – he was elevating the team around him. And so that made – I mean, really everyone, but including Jaguars brass, like think that the roster was better than it actually was. And then this year, like when he gets hurt in the second half of the season and is playing not the worst 6 to 8 game stretch of his career, but – certainly not a good one either, then like the roster is actually exposed for really what it is, like when no one is really there to pick up the pieces around him. Like, I feel like I've been saying this for a couple of weeks, but like who's elevating the offense besides Trevor Lawrence? ETN was in the first half of the season, but we haven't been able to say that for almost 3 months. Like no one's stepping up around him.
Somebody asked me if CJ Beathard would have won that game on Sunday. Yeah, I know. I know. I keep getting called a Trevor defender, and no, that's fine. You know, yeah. I think Trevor Lawrence is a good quarterback. Derek Klassen said the same thing. He said it's basically Andrew Luck syndrome, where people think the team is better than it is, because of him. So when their flaws get revealed, that people assume it's because of him. And I don't know. It's going to be a long off season. The discourse is going to be awful. I'm going to do my best not to engage because my opinion out there is known. I could give a damn less if people disagree. I think I'm on the right side of history here, and I kind of have been frequently with this team. So I think that's going to continue. I don't think the Jaguars should replace Trevor Lawrence with Michael Penix Jr. There, I said it. I said it.
I think the Andrew Luck comparison is really good because, A, it's a team that's in the Jaguars' division, and, B, Luck was probably the most common player comparison for Lawrence when he was entering the draft. So there's a lot of, like, kind of similarities with that story. And, I mean, hopefully the similarities will stop pretty soon and Lawrence will actually have an offensive line that protects him and doesn't give him four injuries over the course of 6 weeks. But the comp that I keep coming back to a little bit is LeBron James, because like the city of Cleveland thought they won the lottery when they got the first overall pick in 2003 and the right to draft LeBron. And I feel like that's kind of how like fans in Jacksonville reacted. It's like, we got the first overall pick, we're getting Trevor Lawrence, like everything's been saved. But then in like the early years, or in LeBron's first stint with the Cavs, he took them to a finals appearance and like five straight playoffs appearances, but the team around him just like was never good enough. He was just like, the Cavs sort of got stuck in mediocrity at one point, which is not where you want to be for any sports team, pro sports team. But I feel like, especially in the NBA, where it's like really hard to get out of mediocrity, because like you can have like one star player like LeBron James and he's good enough to elevate you and like get you out of like a good draft pick basically, but not good enough to like win championships by himself. And so like I'm worried that like A, like Lawrence will like sustain a ton of injuries and kind of like, I have no worries at this moment that he doesn't have like passion for the game. Like, yeah. I think he wants to win more than anyone else in that building. I feel pretty confident about that. But like, I am worried that like injuries could impact over time. But I'm also worried for the LeBron example that like the team just isn't going to be good enough around him for through his second contract. And at a certain point, like being the competitor that he is, he's going to feel forced to leave and move on and join two superstars in Miami.
Yeah, no, I think that's a, you know, great point. To me, again, so much of it comes down to expectations and stuff. And I think nobody wants to talk with context. I've already seen out there he had more turnovers and touchdowns, etc. Well, watch the turnovers, man. Watch the turnovers. I don't think he has a turnover problem. I think he has a fumbling problem, probably. But I can probably count on one hand how many of his interceptions this year where I was like, damn, that was terrible decision, terrible throw. The rest of them, I don't know.
We need to watch the games. Like, we're not trying to be like, oh, everyone should get an NFL Plus account and be grinding to All-22. Like, I don't even have time for that. Like, I wish that I did because I want to be able to provide more knowledge or just context to fans. But, like, it's easier said than done. But, like, when we say watch the games, just, like, watch the interceptions and know the difference between, like, whose fault it is. It's as easy as that.
Wait, I think that kind of sums up, you know, their season and what it lost is. There were, what, probably four, five games that Lawrence shouldn't have played in this year? Like, he probably shouldn't have played the Saints game. He probably shouldn't have played the Browns game. He probably shouldn't have played the Tampa Bay game. He didn't play the Panthers game. And realistically, he probably shouldn't have played this game, you know?
Yeah. I would say, like, at least three. The Saints game, like, on a short week, and, like, you have a winning record, like – yeah, it's tough.
It is. Gus, you ready to take a break and then get into the downfall of Mike Caldwell?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, we'll be right back after this. Gus, all the flowers we gave Mike Caldwell, I hope we got some receipts for. We need to get him right back. It's Jover, my friend. The Jags officially fired Caldwell and seven other defensive assistants yesterday. Those defensive assistants included both defensive backs coaches, Shea Townsend and Corey Grimm, Bob Sutton, inside linebackers coach Tony Gilbert, defensive line coach Brinson Buckner. They also fired running backs coach Bernie Parmalee, which I didn't think was surprising. Like Doug has kind of openly said since last offseason that the running backs haven't been, in my opinion, coached very well. And assistant offensive line coach Todd Washington wasn't fired, but his contract expired and he will not be retained. So 10 coaches gone, 8 defense, 2 offense. It's good. Give me your reaction to when you saw the news that Mike Caldwell and most of his defensive staff would be like, I think only 3 defensive coaches remain. It's like a quality control coach, the assistant defensive line coach who might get a job with Florida for all I know, and the outside linebacker coach, Bill Shuey, who, I mean, Trayvon and Allen combined for 27 and a half sacks. I guess that makes sense. What was your reaction to seeing Caldwell?
Yeah, I think just on Shuey real quick, I think he was like maybe the most like exciting hire under Caldwell's staff when the staff was first released or whatever, because he was previously in Chicago and did a really good job with Khalil Mack basically and Robert Quinn and whoever else they had. And so Shuey seems to like, just based on track record alone, seems like a good coach. So that wasn't a surprise. And really, I wasn't surprised by the Caldwell firing. I don't think it was probably the right move. I think scapegoat is definitely a term that can be used here. I think Caldwell can still be a good play caller and still a good defensive coordinator and still a good defensive coach. And just maybe he'll have better luck either under a new head coach or with different talent. Or, I mean, the biggest thing is probably just like having experience calling plays, because it was his first time calling plays. And like, obviously Jacksonville's defense didn't perform as well as they needed to in week 18 and really the second half of this season. But I think that side of the ball was probably more talent than coach, which you said about the, I don't know if you were talking about the defense as a whole or just the interior defensive line, but yeah,
I think defense as a whole isn't as talented as people think.
Yeah. I think coaching got, I think they were like, Caldwell did a little bit more than what he actually had. And so I think it's understandable again, especially based on like the performance of that side of the ball recently. But yeah, I think it wasn't a surprise because Press Taylor is very obviously Doug Peterson's guy and I don't think was ever going to get fired. And then Trent Baalke was always also a long shot to get fired. And so like, I think those were just like Press and Baalke being gone were just kind of like pipe dreams. But obviously Jacksonville felt like they needed to make some kind of change. And so firing your like unsafe coordinator, at least relative to the other coordinator, made sense. So I think it's not a little bit undeserving, but it's also unsurprising.
Yeah, it was. So I had said on Sunday, I posted on Twitter that I expected changes if they lost. And the most likely of those changes is always going to be Caldwell. And if Doug's firing Press, he's basically firing himself, because him and Press are such in lockstep. I don't think I put out a story yesterday. You can find it on there where I had a couple, you know, source things on Taylor. I don't think the entire organization was ecstatic about him getting play calling duties. I don't think that the entire organization was thrilled when Jim Bob Cooter left. But if you're letting Doug pick his staff, then it doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what other people in the organization thinks. It matters what Doug thinks. And Doug made very clear at his press conference. So at Doug's final press conference, I don't think that he was throwing Trevor under the bus as much as fans do. Most of the questions were about Trevor, hence why Trevor was talked about the most. But I do think that he put on the kid gloves and protected Press. What was the quote? He said, you can close your eyes and just pick a play, basically, with how bad that we were playing on offense.
Right.
That's asinine. Like, I put out a comparison yesterday of, you know, some points per game, yards per game, DVOA, EPA, success rate, yards per game, yards per play, all this stuff. They regressed in every single area statistically. And the only three changes were swapping Juwan for Anton, swapping Marvin Jones for Calvin Ridley, and Press Taylor taking over play calling full time. So I think that I don't think firing Press would have fixed things per se, but I do think that he had the worst year out of the two coordinators. But I will say that I probably would have made the change at defense coordinator as well, honestly. And
yeah,
I guess my thing is I'm not feeling like they fired like a star defensive coordinator who's about to go like to his next stop and just light things up. You know, I think he's probably about like a league average coordinator, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of their issues were his or the coaching's fault personally, but it, like, to me, the move, it just feels like buying a new shoe because you keep shooting yourself in the foot. Like, yeah, you need a shoe that doesn't have a hole in it, but if you're going to just keep like shooting yourself, what's the point, you know? And that to me was, I think a lot of it, their issues stem more from their team building philosophies and their personnel moves than anything coaching wise. But it was always most likely that Caldwell would be fired. Like he's not Press Taylor. He doesn't have that kind of cachet with Doug, even though they obviously go back. I thought it was interesting that Doug hired a first-time defense coordinator to begin with when he took the job. And I think that, at least from their perspective, you know, I wrote after the game that when you have this kind of collapse, you need to change something. It doesn't matter what, but you need to change something. They can say they did now. You know, they can say we fired 8 coaches on defensive staff, 10 coaches in general. Nobody can say they didn't respond. You know what I mean? So they're kind of giving themselves some like plausible deniability. It does feel like a half measure though. Like it doesn't feel at all like it's solving the problem. It's addressing the problem, not solving it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, so every coaching staff and front office does this where like they keep their friends, like, and they hire their friends. And that's like what Doug's been doing. Like he hired his buddy in Press Taylor. And then when Jim Bob Cooter left, like they hired Lou Holtz, who was another like buddy under that tree. And so I think they need to like branch out a little bit more. Like I was saying a week or two ago that they should hire just like anyone from Miami's staff, partly because, I mean, Mike McDaniel seems like an awesome coach and I would want someone under his tree specifically, but just like get someone that's not, that hasn't been under the Peterson tree in general, to just like inject some new juice and new life into ideas, into like not just be like a yes man for Press and Doug. And so the biggest surprise to me, I think, from the last 24 hours of news out of Jacksonville is that wide receivers coach Chad Hall is still on the staff, because I feel like that's the position that had like the most mental mishaps and was really just like the most underwhelming position in general, because even though they didn't really have a lot of depth going into the season, like on paper, Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk, and Zay Jones is a productive and talented starting trio of receivers. And then obviously injuries didn't hurt, but it felt like coaching didn't either. But I remember when Chad was hired last year, he was in like his first interview, he was talking about the connection that he had with Doug and Philly. And I is thankful for Doug giving him a chance. And I think he's pretty similar to Press, where he really wants to be a head coach one day. And so it was a surprise for me at first to see that he was not also let go along with Parmalee. But then like when I thought about it and remembered that like he actually has a connection with Doug, and I don't know if they're like true boys or friends or whatever, but they have a connection, and so that made me less surprised that he's sticking around.
Yeah, I didn't expect as many offensive changes, because again, Doug has like his handprints all over the offense. It feels like Doug and Press can take a step back and say, we're going to work our asses off to fix this offseason, et cetera, et cetera. I get it from that perspective. Also, the one thing I will say is if they had fired Press, it'd be, what, Trevor's third offensive coordinator in 4 years?
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. You know, they're about to have their fourth defensive coordinator in 5 years. So also not a good thing, but I get it to that extent. Like, it seems like their answer for the offense is let's roll up our sleeves and get back to work and try to fix whatever the hell went wrong. But I think that there is a lot on that side that they need to fix. Defensively, how attractive of a job is this to you if you're a defensive coordinator candidate? Nah?
I mean, the past defensive coordinator just got scapegoated out of town. So now I want to come to town and get thrown under the bus for the team's overall poor performance. I mean, it's that. And then, like, we just talked about how, at least in my opinion, Caldwell, or in both of our opinions, Caldwell got more out of the roster than what was actually on the roster. And it's more of a talent than a coaching issue. And so, like, that's not really an enticing job to me. And, like, maybe it would be a good, like, bouncing point or a jumping point for, like, a guy who is kind of known as a coordinator but really wants to be a head coach. And he's like, all right, well, let me go work with Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker and Tyson Campbell for two seasons and try to buoy that, like, young talent into a head coaching opportunity down the line. But for someone who's, like, just comfortable with, like, being a straight up defensive coordinator and, like, would be open to the idea of, like, being on Jaguars as staff long term, like, I think the best thing about the position is that the fact that it's open. And, like, they have a need, like, the job needs to be filled, but it, like, it's not a super enticing job, at least compared to a lot of other openings around the league.
Yeah, I mean, which players is a defensive coordinator getting stoked about when he looks at the roster? Josh Allen, obviously. A healthy Andre Sisco. Trayvon probably, like, a guy – would probably look at, like, I think our opinions of Trayvon looking at, like, the pressure stuff is very different than how people in football would think about it, right? Like, I think the Jags are probably streaking and taking victory laps that, you know, Trayvon got 10 sacks. I had somebody ask me yesterday if, like, is there any chance Trayvon moves inside next season? And no, hell no. He just had 10 sacks. You think Trip Balky's going to let him get moved inside?
I was going to say, I think Trayvon might be behind only Josh Allen in terms of, like, enticing players to coach just because of his versatility, where I agree with you that, like, even with the whoever gets hired next year, like, he's going to continue to be an outside linebacker. Yeah. But hypothetically, like, the coordinator could use him inside on passing downs a little bit more.
Does the coordinator get excited about Foye? I think football people probably would like him more than your standard film watcher and fan.
Yeah, I think people would be excited. Coaches would be excited about Foye. I think fans would probably be a little bit more excited about Tyson and Andre because I think they're, like, not, like, one-dimensional isn't really a great word, but I think they're, like, not, like, chess pieces that you can move around wherever. Like, Tyson is obviously, like, has, like, specific matchups that he is really good at and is, like, just, like, a physical boundary corner. And, like, you don't really want to move him into the slot even if an opposing premier receiver moves into the slot. And then for Sisco, I feel like he's become a really, really good deep safety. But I mean, like, we just saw in week 18, some pretty brutal tackling attempts. And I would chalk part of that up to, like, various injuries he sustained throughout the year. I'm sure that's a big part of, like, not being able to get downhill and tackle Derrick Henry. But, like, even before the week 18 game, like, he's turning into a very good center fielder or just, like, deep safety, but he could still get a little bit better closer to the line of scrimmage.
The pick you had was a great play, but I agree with you. Tackling definitely needs to improve. Darius Williams, I don't think you get excited about. Like, he's going to be, what, 30, 31 years old and weighs like a buck 50, but I think you can at least, like, see the vision of, okay, I think a coordinator candidate can say, I have two outside corners. I have two outside linebackers. I have an intriguing young guys in Sisco and Antonio Johnson. Everything else, I think, is up in the air. So, scale 1 to 10, how enticing of a job would this be to you?
6 is my answer. I almost wonder, though, like it kind of, like, goes both ways a little bit because, like, if obviously it would be nice to come in as a coordinator to, like, an already loaded roster, and, like, all you have to do is just coach good players, and that makes your job easier, obviously. But I wonder if a coordinator would also be interested in a roster that's like not totally complete so that they can kind of put like their own blueprint or their own fingerprints on it.
That makes sense. Who are some names just off the top of your head who you think would make sense? I got 12 for you. We can run down, but
yeah.
Are there any names not on that list that we can go through the list first and then you can give me any other
names. Yeah, let's go through your list first and then I have names written down. So if there's any other ones, then I can pipe up.
All right. So I think he's going to want like a proven defensive coordinator, a guy who's done it before. I think Doug Peterson wants to like set it and forget it when it comes to defense. He wants to do what he did in Philadelphia with Jim Schwartz, who he's been a head coach. He's been defensive coordinator. You don't need to babysit him. He knows what he's doing. Just give them the keys, let them handle defense. He can focus solely on the offense. That's what I would presume that he wants. So that's what this list is mostly on. So one name, Wink Martindale. The Giants defense hasn't been good under him, but their roster is terrible, obviously. I feel like he gets the most out of his front seven players, you know, really exotic schemes. He blitzes quarterbacks to hell. Just the only two caveats with him. One, I'm not sure he's the easiest guy to get along with. He got fired in Baltimore, and now him and Brian Daboll have obviously kind of – their relationship has kind of run its course. Two, he's a really interesting situation to where his resignation hasn't actually been made official. So the Athletic's Giants writer, I wish I remembered his name. I don't – did like a nice summary of this. Since he is not fired, the Giants, other than a head coaching opportunity, which nobody's going to try to give him, you know, I mean, his name is Wink. Nobody's going to make him a head coach. They can't block that. They can block anything else. If they fired him, he can go to Philadelphia and become their defense coordinator next year. They probably don't want that. So by keeping him under contract, they can literally determine where he coaches next year. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I would imagine they wouldn't care about him leaving for the AFC South, but it's at least something to monitor. So there's one name. Is that a name that would interest you?
Yeah, for sure. I would say like the only other qualm I have, I think part of the reason that he got fired from Baltimore and they brought in like this new hotshot defense coordinator from the college ranks, who's probably would be my pick for like among, I think I would pick Mike McDonald to be my head coach over Ben Johnson from the Lions. Or Brian, is it Brian Johnson or Ben Johnson?
It's Ben Johnson. Just while we're on the topic, how is Ben Johnson different than hiring Arthur Smith a few years ago? There's a very real scenario that in 2 years, fantasy Twitter is complaining about how often Ben Johnson runs the ball, right?
I'm not willing to rule it out, but like, I don't know. Like, it's tough to judge an offense coordinator when like, obviously, like he's running the show there, and like Mike or not Vrabel, Dan Campbell doesn't like have his fingerprints all over the offense or whatever. But I also think Dan Campbell is one of those like old school Tom Coughlin-esque coaches who are like, we need to run the ball. We like that's requirement number one. So like, it honestly wouldn't surprise me if like Ben Johnson got out of Detroit and like went to somewhere. With like if say he gets hired by the Chargers, like I would certainly expect the Chargers to be like at the top of the league and like pass heaviness over expectation or whatever. Like
even my prediction is it would he be goes good to Carolina.
Carolina makes sense, and that was my first thought. But I was like, this is going to be a harder metaphor or analogy, whatever. What I'm saying, Bryce Young instead of Justin Herbert.
My prediction is he goes to Carolina and he's fired in 2 years.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that's a good prediction. But so what I was trying to say about Wink is that I think part of the reason he was fired from Baltimore is that he's one of those coordinators that's like, line up and do what I'm going to do. Like, he's almost like Gus Bradley in – not in the scheme at all because, like,
Bradley was
4-3, like, one high, same thing every time. And then Wink Martindale has a 3-4 with, like, a bunch of blitzes and a lot more aggressive than Gus. But they're similar to coordinators in that, like – They do their thing and they stick to it. And so I think in Baltimore, Wink was just like a little bit too sold on his own system. And like he would just blitz, blitz, blitz. And if he got beat, he got beat. And so the Ravens were like, especially with Joe Burrow being in the conference or in their division. And then I guess Deshaun Watson was like heading there that offseason that they made the coordinator switch. They were like, we can't be doing this where we're just like line up and play regardless of the opposing quarterback. And so I think that's one of the things that Caldwell actually did fairly well in Jacksonville was not that he was like one of the best game planners across the whole league, but I think he did do a good job of like kind of shutting down like top competition because like, yeah, Mahomes was 3-0 against the Jags, but I feel like especially this year, like the defense actually did a fairly good job. And then like against the Bills this year, against the Ravens this year, like Jacksonville's defense has held their own against some elite quarterbacks, even if they also let Derrick Henry have like the best game of his season. And so that would be my concern is that like, I think the new defensive coordinator obviously has to be a guy that like gets the most out of his talent and like inspires his talent. But like, he also has to be to a certain extent, a good game planner. So that would be kind of like my only shortcoming with Wink or my only worry about him.
And I think all that's fair. I forgot to say this when we're talking about Caldwell, but just back on him, I completely get firing him. I mean, give up 150 plus yards to Derrick Henry. You let Jake Browning, Baker Mayfield, Joe Flacco tear you up. I get it on that extent. So I'm not going to be over here saying that they did him wrong, anything like that. I get it. So next name, the name I think should be at the top of the list, Leslie Frazier.
Yeah, I agree. Before you even sent it, I was like, when I was doing some research on candidates last night, and Frazier was like definitely the name that popped out to me. So it's nice that we're aligned on this one.
Yeah, I mean, his last 2 years in Buffalo, they had the first and second defense by DVOA. They fell to 12th this year. And I know they had some injuries, Matt Milano, et cetera, but he is a better defensive mind than Sean McDermott is. He's somebody who, you know, like Schwartz, he's been a head coach. He's been a coordinator forever. You can give him the defense and just walk away, basically, and trust that it's in good shape. He plays a ton of nickel, which I think would kind of go into where the NFL in general is heading. Also, he's a former Buffalo guy, and Doug's kind of been the haven for, like, Buffalo coaches who hate Sean McDermott. I think that, you know,
Who else?
And Heath Farwell.
Oh, that's a good one, actually.
Basically, every coach who gets wrong by Sean McDermott ends up on Doug Peterson's staff. So I think Frazier would make a lot of sense.
I think so, too. I think like he's just, like, such a good coach and where you can, like, really see it with the eye test for some defensive coordinators. Like, I think Mike McDonald with the Ravens right now is a good example of this, where, like, what they're doing on the back end of the defense is, like, not really – difficult at all, where like McDonald actually does do a decent amount of like disguise coverages and rotating coverages and stuff like that. But even when the Ravens and the Bills, when they were under Frazier, like just kind of like line up and play just like a simple cover two, the way that their defenders are able to pass off concepts and communicate is like you can just tell that it's like an extremely well-coached unit. And so like, I feel like that's what you could see from Frazier's units in Buffalo is just watching the defense, how well the secondary communicates and passes off routes. Is like you can just tell like whoever's running this unit, they get it. And so I think Frazier makes a ton of sense because of like what I just said. Like I think he's objectively a good defensive coach. But then I think he also makes sense in the mold that we were talking about earlier. Like a guy that you can just kind of like hand the keys to the defense to. And like he might end up being like Andy Reid's version of Spags or I feel like there's another good example out there. But like Andy Reid's version of Spags where it's like a really good offensive head coach and then a like older defensive coach that's just like not really planning on going anywhere. And it's a pretty nice like 1-2 setup.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I guess the next name would be this is one name I'm iffy on. I think he's a good candidate. It's just I hate the Vic Fangio tree, dude. I don't like Vic Fangio defenses.
I think this might be the one, though. This might be the one.
Ejiro Evero, Panthers defense coordinator. I don't blame him for how bad the Panthers defense is this year. Shaq Griffin starting for them at cornerback. They have one NFL-level pass rusher on their roster. They have, what, like two good defenders between Brian Burns and Derrick Brown. So he's an interesting one to me. Denver's defense is really good.
Sorry to interrupt. The Panthers wouldn't have won a game if they didn't have Evero coordinator in their defense. Like, I think he's a very good example of a guy that gets more out of his roster than the talent they actually have. Because, like, there are some, like, big names in Carolina between Burns, Derrick Brown, Jeremy Chin, Thompson, the linebacker. But really, like Thompson had an Shaq Thompson was really good up until this year, but he had an injury in the beginning of the season. So I feel like he hasn't really been the same. Same goes for Jeremy Chin, where he was like a young ascending safety, but he's been kind of like hampered by injuries. So it's like really just been like Brian Burns and Derrick Brown and a bunch of NPCs. And so I think Press was definitely complimentary of his defense before the Jags played the Panthers this year and said, yeah, even when he was with the Broncos last year, like his defense gave us a lot of fits. And like, obviously, the Jaguars were able to have a good amount of success against the Panthers in that Week 17 game when they won 26-0 or whatever. But yeah. I think he's like very much like a legit young hotshot name to like monitor and not just a name that's going to be faded in 3 years. So yeah, it will be interesting. The only other thing to add for him is that like we have to see what happens in Carolina, because I don't think he's necessarily like a big head coach candidate for the Panthers, but I wouldn't be surprised if whoever becomes the head coach for the Panthers keeps him on staff as their D coordinator.
And there's a couple guys on this list like that. Next one, Joe Cullen.
it'd
be hilarious because he was literally just a defense coordinator here. But the first point is his first defense coordinator stint obviously went awful. They were one of the worst defenses in the league. Terrible pass rush, couldn't stop the run, didn't get any turnovers. But, dude, Jahad Ward was their number two edge rusher. Malcolm Brown started for them. Damian Wilson and Miles Jack were their line. Like, he had the worst personnel in the NFL at his disposal. So, I don't blame him for that. And I think a lot of people don't know. I tweeted this, but he wanted to stay in Jacksonville. He kept showing up for work after that season. After Urban and everybody got fired, because he was still technically employed by them, he wanted to stay in Jacksonville, but the coaching search took so long that eventually he had to take a job because he wasn't sure that Doug Peterson would retain him. So if you get offered a job, you have to take it. So I don't think he would be unwilling to come back to Jacksonville because he wanted to stay in Jacksonville. You know, he's somebody who was obviously fond of his time there. Also, he now works for Andy Reid, who can, you know, obviously he's close to Doug. He can go to bat for him. And he's learned from Spags.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Can he be Doug Spags?
Oh, that's a good point, man. I also like the fact that he's a defensive line coach. Yeah. And because, like, I think that, like, obviously we're focusing on defensive coordinator talk right now. But I think whoever the Jags, like, I think the most important position coach that they end up hiring under the coordinator is going to be the defensive line coach. Cause I think that it's just like the interior defensive line just has to get better and has to take like the biggest jump for any position on the defense going into next year. So I really like the fact a lot that he's a D line guy, and I'm definitely would look forward to more of his press conferences again, cause those were always a hoot. But the only thing I remember from his time in Jacksonville was, this is when I was still writing for you and Jaguar Report. They were a very heavy like man coverage scheme with like a lot of pressure, and I was like, they just don't have the horses to hold up. Like Shaq Griffin was actually having like a decent season for them at that point, but like Herndon was getting smoked every single week because they would played so much man, and then like opposing quarterbacks could pick on Herndon, and I guess C.J. Henderson was traded right before that season. So.
The linebackers Jack and Damian Wilson will be covering.
Yeah, college. Damian Wilson. Yeah. Holy cow. So, but like, and then so I wrote like about 2 months into the season that like something had to change because they just didn't have the horses to hold up in man coverage. And then they beat the Bills. Was that game in London? No, that was in Jacksonville, right, when they beat the Bills. And that game they played a ton of zone coverage and like switched overnight in terms of like what their defense was. And they were really able to like get into Josh Allen, the Bills quarterback's head. And so again, like that's really the only thing I remember. And like maybe there was a defensive scheme change, like out of necessity and more because like he was being smart. So like, I don't know. It's hard to give him like all the credit for that Buffalo win, but I think he deserves a decent amount of credit for that Buffalo win.
Oh, they won like what, like 9-6 or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
I'll give him credit for it.
So I think he's solid.
All right, next name. My least favorite name on the list. Some people I really respect, still think he's a good coach. Brandon Staley, soy boy himself. It'd be sweet irony, him coming back to the place that basically got him, that set the ball in motion for him to get fired.
Right.
I think the cope would be saying that his defenses with the Chargers sucked because he had a hand in personnel, and that if you take that away from him and just make him coach, maybe he's a better coach.
Yeah, I think he's like one of those guys that might be better suited to be a coordinator than a head coach. I would honestly be pretty surprised if he was able to land a coordinating job this year. I think he's like going to get a couple of interviews, and then he's going to end up having to like either take a year off or go back to college for a season or just be a position coach basically before he like gets another shot at being a play calling defensive coordinator or head coach. Probably a similar story for Mike Caldwell, where like maybe he could land on his feet as a defensive coordinator next season.
But like I don't think
Staley is going to be a defensive coordinator, at least in 2023. And so I think like I'm of the opinion that he would be a good defensive coordinator if you kind of like just had him like not be the head coach or not be the general manager, not have like too many responsibilities. Cause I think like obviously his Chargers teams didn't perform as well, like when he didn't have Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald anymore. But like I remember specifically the Chargers game against Miami last year. He had a really good game plan of having his cornerbacks press Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle at the line of scrimmage, which hypothetically you'd think is scary because like if either of those players beat the press, then they're going to have wide open touchdowns deep downfield. But the reason Staley did that is to kind of like disrupt the timing of Tua in like the short passing game. And it worked out really well, and the Chargers won that game. And so I think he can still be like a good game planner and a good coordinator, but I just don't think it's a very good fit for the Jaguars in 2024.
I don't disagree with you there. And then, I don't like the Fangio style of defense. So I'm iffy on him, you know, to begin with. Plus, him having hissy fits all season with reporters was pretty funny. One name forgot. Dang it, dude. I forgot to put Mike Zimmer's name on there. Mike Zimmer.
Yes.
My personal wish list. Number one, I want to see him, Mike Zimmer, Gene Fournette, the immovable object against the unstoppable force. Give me that press conference. I will sell tickets to it.
Man, I would love Zimmer. Zimmer's definitely going to be in my article. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, I just realized I completely goofed on that one. So, anyway, next one, Patrick Graham, defense coordinator of the Raiders. That's one. He's one of the guys on this list too. I'm not even sure if he's going to be available. If Antonio Pierce keeps that job, then I'm assuming Graham stays. But right. I really think Mark Davis wants to hire a big name coach and not Antonio Pierce. So I'm working under that assumption. He's another guy really versatile in his like defensive philosophies. He's ran a couple different schemes. He was really liked in New York. He never really had great defenses there, but he was really liked there. Their defense this year, probably the most overperforming unit in the NFL.
I was going to say that, yeah. Like, yeah. Speaking of coaches who get more out of their roster than the talent is actually there, like, that's Patrick Graham.
Yeah. So, next name, Jerry Gray. Not a household name, but he, you know, was a former defense coordinator with the Titans. He was a passing game coordinator and defensive backs coach with Green Bay. He was in Atlanta this past season. Really, really good defensive backs coach, has like been phenomenal at developing defensive backs at every stop he's been at. He last coordinated almost a decade ago, so that's up there. But he's like a super well-respected guy who it's probably less of a set and forget type of hire. But if you want player development, that's probably one of the better hires that you can make.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's 61 years old. And as you said, he hasn't coordinated in over a decade. And so I think he might be the kind of guy that like gets some interviews, but then ends up staying put. But I think it's, as you said, for the development traits alone, it's worth monitoring.
Next name, Marquon Manuel. He former defense coordinator in, you know, Atlanta, another defensive back space guy. He's the safeties coach in New York now, so it'd be like a leap going from safeties coach to coordinator, but he's been a coordinator for several seasons, and he was the coordinator in Atlanta when Dimitroff was just completely punting on defensive personnel, and they still had some solid units. He's a guy who he's a really well-respected within the NFL. People like agents and stuff I talk to, he's probably more talked about in NFL circles than he is among fans, but that's not a hire I think will get people, you know, up and moving.
No, I don't think so. I feel like he doesn't really like fit the criteria of being just an old head, pretty much, that can hang out under Doug's staff for a while. Because he would be like the former player slash young guy that's at the top of my list for like who I would hire. Because I think he's definitely gonna get a coordinating job. I would bet that he gets a coordinating job for like this upcoming season, and then is a coach within a couple of years. I hadn't learned about him since last night, but everything I read about him last night was impressive. So
He's really respected. All right, you ready for the wild card?
Yes.
The one guy who hasn't been an NFL defense coordinator on this list, Jesse Minter. Could he be? Do you know Jesse Minter? Yeah. Could he be Doug's Mike McDonald? Mike McDonald was hired, fresh face out of college, only a couple years as a defensive assistant in the NFL. John Harbaugh took a big leap with him. Has turned out to be one of the better hires in recent NFL history, like as a coordinator. You see the vision?
I completely see the vision. The only thing about it is that I feel like Jim Harbaugh is like 90% chance to be an NFL head coach next year, right? Like, I feel like the writing is in the pudding or whatever the phrase is. And like, if Harbaugh is going to be an NFL coach, like, just my thing is like, why wouldn't he bring Minter along to be his defensive coordinator?
That's true. That's
so like, I think like Minter is either going to be able to like interview to be the head coach at Michigan, or he's going to be just dragged along with Harbaugh and continue to be his defensive coordinator. I feel like it's kind of a long shot for any other scenario.
That's a good point. All right. You ready for the worst candidate on this list? I'm including him because he has the qualifications, but Mike Patine. That one, I almost would pay for that hire to happen just to see the fan reaction, dude. People would be pissed. He wasn't good in Green Bay. He was obviously a bad head coach at the Browns. I think he's probably a better coach than people give him credit. Like, he's better than Joe Barry, you know? And at the very least, he has spent this last year with Brian Flores. Maybe it's given him some new ideas, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But
people wouldn't be happy.
No, I'm with you. It's between this and another name. I don't think it's on your list, so I'll just say it. Rex Ryan and Mike Patine were like the two names that I was like, if either of these two guys gets hired, then alarm bells should be going off.
All right. Next one, Chris Ricard, former Seahawks defense coordinator. In my opinion, out of like Pete Carroll defense coordinators in Seattle, he was the second best one after Dan Quinn, better than Gus Bradley and stuff. He has passing game coordinator background. He basically half coordinated the Cowboys defense for a couple years, has been with the Saints as a really valuable member of their staff the last couple years. I think he's a quality coach. It's not a hire that would get people excited, but I think you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, maybe the Saints coaching tree wouldn't be a bad one to pick from, because I know that like people aren't sold on Dennis Allen as a head coach, which is fair, but like for as long as he's been in New Orleans, that Saints defense has been legit. And so like now Chris Richard is a viable candidate, and I feel like he's has a good chance to be a defensive coordinator somewhere next year. And then
I said Ricard.
And then Ryan Nielsen is currently with the Falcons as their defensive coordinator.
That was the next name. Yeah, take two of these.
Now, so like he's the coordinator for the Falcons right now, but Arthur Smith got fired, and so did he get what's his deal? Did he officially get fired, or is it like, because I'm assuming that he's one of those guys that's like the next head coach might just bring him onto the staff.
I think
he's
Arthur
done a really good job in Atlanta.
I think it was just Arthur Smith. Yeah, I'm with Nielsen was the best defense coordinator hire this season. Like, people forget how toothless the Falcons' defense has been for the last couple of years. And I know they spent big on Jesse Bates and Calais and all that, but they don't have an NFL quality pass rusher on that roster. And they're still like a really solid front seven. They're really good in the back end. They mix up like safety looks a lot. They play a lot of man coverage. I'm with you, dude. Like, Dennis Allen, yeah, he's a dork. And he's obviously not a good head coach, but he's a good defensive coach. And all of like his assistants from there have been good defensive coaches. I think if Nielsen's available, he has to be like in the top three on that list, right?
Yeah. Honestly, I was gonna say going into this, Frazier was like my top guy that I was like, if I was making the decision for the Jaguars today, I would go Frazier. But now that we've talked about it, I think Nielsen is my guy because like he was the best coordinator hire last year. So like I think it makes a lot of sense that he would be the best one this year too. But I also think there's a ton of similarities that you can draw between the Falcons defense that he's coordinated in 2023 versus the Jaguars' current roster, because they both have a very good, albeit not yet like totally elite cornerback in A.J. Terrell versus Tyson Campbell, even though Terrell is definitely a little bit better and a little bit older. And they've got like really physical, big defensive linemen. Let me rephrase that. In Atlanta and then like also and in New Orleans, they really value big defensive edges who can like just take up the whole edge and like really play contain and like channel everything inside. Like Cameron Jordan has been doing that for the Saints for a decade plus. And so I think it's really important for Nielsen's scheme to have two really stout defenders on the edge. And the Jags already have that. So they already have like the A.J. Terrell, Tyson Campbell thing. And then Jesse Bates has been incredible for them this season as a free agent, free safety signing. And I feel like Bates is a better player than Cisco, but I feel like they're like very similar molds where like if Nielsen is like coaching out this like all pro or Pro Bowl season or whatever for Jesse Bates, then I'm excited to see what he would be able to do with another like ball hawking free safety like Andre Cisco.
Be interesting to see what he could do with Antonio Johnson, I think.
Yeah.
Who I still say is a safety, you know, not a cornerback or whatever. All right, Gus.
I said 2 weeks ago and you were like, oh, but what is he playing on the field?
He's been a cornerback this year. He is a safety at heart.
Man, okay. I agree with that. I'm just
okay. Yeah. Get back in your locker, nerd. All right. Yeah, and he did you see that?
I saw it on your screen. Did you see a lightning strike on my screen? Like,
yeah, little lightning storm over here, man. Zeus is pissed about that Mike Caldwell hire, man.
We're gonna have to bunker down after this one.
Yeah.
All right. So names.
Any other names?
Bill Shuey, just any chance that he gets like drawn up. Like I'm not thinking anything specific about Shuey.
I want to shake you.
I'm just wondering, like, if because like for the Giants, like I once the Wink news came out, it was like who are like in-house candidates to replace Wink. So like I'm just thinking of like what if there's an in-house candidate that makes sense. And if there is one, it would probably be Shuey. But that probably also doesn't make sense, as your reaction tells all of us. So other ones I've got written down, Anthony Weaver, who's the Ravens assistant head coach and defensive line coach. He's one that's really popular and just like hotshot future candidate / head coach.
Didn't they interview him in 2021?
Maybe. It definitely seemed like a familiar name where it was like, this isn't just a familiar name because like I've read his name in coordinator articles before.
Yeah. Anthony Weaver to interview for a spot on Urban Meyer's staff. Yeah.
So I think he would be similar to Colin almost, where it's like he's specializes in defensive line, but he's also spent the last season learning under an extremely good defensive coordinator / game planner. So yeah. Weaver's definitely one. Chris Harris, I don't know if we were talking before the show or during, but he's the Titans, I believe. I don't know if he's the defensive coordinator or if he has like a slightly lower title, but was on the Titans staff. And he's like another name that like got a decent amount of interviews last year for coordinator positions. And it feels like it's just a matter of time before he is a coordinator. And so Chris Harris is a name to watch. Antonio Pierce I had written down because I think Patrick Graham makes more sense if they're going to hire a former Raider coach. But, like, again, like, as important as X's and O's are, obviously motivation is pretty important for a coach too. And, like, the Raiders have been playing so incredibly hard, not for Josh McDaniel, but for Antonio Pierce. And so that's been pretty cool to watch from afar this season. Mike Zimmer I had written down.
Yeah.
Gerard Mayo, because I'm just assuming that I feel like he was billed for a long time as like the natural Patriots successor or the natural Bill Belichick successor for the Patriots in New England. But I don't know if he's like really viewed as that now. I think the Patriots are probably going to do everything they can to get Mike Vrabel. And even if not Vrabel, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of shoot for a bigger fish than Gerard Mayo, who's never been a coordinator or a head coach. And so I was basically just thinking, like, he's been a hot name, and if he doesn't get the opportunity that he's looking for in New England, then maybe he could be a coordinator somewhere else. The last one I've got is Denard Wilson, who is
that's a good one. That see, I restricted myself. I was like 11 guys who have been coordinators and also Jesse Minter. But that's a good one. I like that one.
Because I was trying to like – I was mostly just – at first I was trying to think of like just guys who would be good candidates. But then obviously it makes a lot of sense to try to find coaches who have connections to Doug Peterson or the Jaguars. Excuse me, Jaguars staff in general. And so the only guy that I was able to find in the last 24 hours is Denard Wilson, who's – the Eagles defensive backs coach, and he just got the title defensive passing game coordinator this past year. He was hired by Philadelphia in 2020, which was the last season of Peterson's tenure with the Eagles. And so technically Peterson and this guy, Denard Wilson, were on the same staff together. And so he is like, I believe a former player who's like became a position coach and is kind of looking for his first chance. So for that reason, I don't think he really fits the criteria we're looking for as old heads, but he's a guy with connections. And so I think that and Marquand Manuel, who you were talking about earlier, who's really well-respected inside NFL circles, those would be the two like young guys that I'm looking out for.
I think that's a good call. They definitely need to add. I think experience will probably, like, I don't know, Mike Caldwell was kind of a young hire to an extent, you know, like a fresh face who's never been a coordinator before. Normally when coaches fire somebody, they try to hire the opposite. So I'm thinking it will be an experienced kind of guy. To me, the best hires in order would be Frazier, Nielsen, and Martin.
I think we've got a pretty clear top two, which is good.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, Gus. Pretty sure this is our longest episode ever, but a lot to talk about. You got anything else for me, my friend?
Yeah, I got one more thing. For the people watching this, I'm going to put my final draft prediction, my final prediction for who the Jaguars are going to take in the first round in April. Because I know you're not going to let me change it once I like.
Oh, hell no.
Just like the Ravens pick, but the Ravens.
You're welcome. You're welcome for that, by the way.
We'll see what happens, but you probably did accidentally steer me in the right direction. So,
like I often have done.
Here it is for the people watching on YouTube. If you're not watching, would appreciate if you just hopped on over once the last couple minutes of this podcast. Check out who the Jaguars will pick in April. Maybe throw a like and subscribe. I feel like our best podcasting has been like the past 3 weeks. I think we put together some really good shows, and it's a shame that the Jaguars this season is kind of like going in a different direction. And we weren't really able to capitalize on them being in the playoffs. Yeah. But I think it was still a fun season recording with you, buddy, and appreciate all the people who have been listening along the way. It was really meaningful to see a couple of shout outs being like for the Spotify Wrapped, but then also just at the end of the year. So appreciate appreciate all the listeners and watchers.
Yeah, no, just like you said, I appreciate everybody. I appreciate everybody who tweeted bulky ball at me throughout the season.
Oh man, that was the highlight. Honestly, the highlight of the whole season might have just been the bulky ball bit.
So we're going to do an award show. We'll schedule it. And there will be a bulky ball of the year on there. So just letting you know. But I appreciate everybody who listened every single week, even when you didn't want to. I've had several people tell me that they don't like listening to podcasts and they're losing. So I thank you guys for listening anyways. And Gus, I just want to say from me personally, thank you, Gus. I've loved doing this podcast with you. You're somebody who I've always, since I've met you, I've enjoyed talking ball with you. But I genuinely, like, if I could pick, like, out of the crowd of football people I know and do a podcast with, I mean, it's you, man. So I appreciate you, your efforts, you letting me yell at you throughout the season. And we're not stopping. We'll be back. Like I said, we're going to plan another episode, whether that's later this week, next week, or whatever. And we're going to be around in the off season. We're not going to go away for 6 months like I've done before. So we will be around. But thank you guys for listening. And Gus, my friend, thank you. But just me personally, I think every single person who follows me and listens to anything I have to say needs to do the same for Gus. I think he knows personally more about the game than me. I think he can frame it better than I can. I'm just better at having absolutely ridiculous hot takes. So
that's one your strengths and weaknesses. My takesmanship for sure. One of the comments that I got was like, Gus, you have no idea how to do a hot take, but appreciate the content you have provided this year. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty fair. But I can't say that I wouldn't be here where I'm sitting today without you, because I am currently in my bedroom. But in terms of my career and everything that's happened the past couple of years since I started writing for you and doing this podcast a couple of years ago, my career would not be the same without you. So appreciate you as well, my friend.
I mean, give me that fist. Yeah, there we go. All right. Thank you guys for listening to the Jaguar Report podcast this year. This was episode 85. Who would have thought?
Not us.
Yeah, not us. Thank you guys for being bulky bald all year. And we will be back. Like I said, who knows? So just go ahead and stay tuned. But thank you guys, as always.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.